The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we're working hard to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. And the way we do that is, we talk about real estate on this show, and I try to bring in people who are actively doing it in the market today to talk about the different things that they do so that you get other ideas of how you might do things, or maybe brand new ideas about what is out there for you. I've had a couple of experiences over the years where listeners said, I didn't even know that you could do X. And then I heard your guest and I looked into it and now I'm doing X. So yay, public service. So one of the ways, though, that we do it is every month there's just a question and answer day, because, you know, I don't know what's going on in your individual mind about what you need to build wealth, quit your job, whatever your goal is in real estate. So I learned a while back that people would call and ask questions whether we had a question and answer day or not. And when you've got an accountant on and somebody calls up and asks questions about how to run a trailer park, that gets a little awkward. So we just have a free-for-all Q&A day, generally on the first Wednesday of each month, and that is today. So, if you have a question, you can either send it to our new email address, which is vinaradio@gmail.com, vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can call it in, which in some ways, depending on the nature of your question, sometimes calling in is way better, because, like, somebody already sent me a question, because I do, by the way, have an e-letter that goes out every week on Tuesday to tell you what the topic of the show is, to tell you how to contact me if you have questions, to tell you what's going on in the real estate world. And if you're not signed up for that, you can do that at reallifereallestate.com. But anyway, a couple of people have sent questions in. And the first one that came up, I was like, I need to know more than what you just told me in order to answer your question. So, like, if you called, then I would be able to ask you the questions back that would tell me more about the correct answer, or at least my answer. Maybe it's not the correct answer. I don't know. My answer to the question would be. So the phone number is 877-772-9658, 877-772-9658, and you can call anytime while we're live on the air, which will be until about 5 till 6 Eastern time. So we're going to go ahead and go to the phones and talk to Jonathan, who's calling from Miami. Jonathan, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
How are you, Vina? What's going on?
Oh, man. It's an exciting week here in Ohio because we've got our big real estate trade show tomorrow. But I guess you won't be attending since you're...
That's right. I'll make it up. I'll be at your event in a couple of weeks. We'll all be good.
Woohoo! Yeah, awesome.
So great. So the question is, and this is something that comes up and a lot with me, especially with these doctor loans. These doctor loans that doctors get are variable rate. They'll let them borrow a lot of money. And within the last year, a bunch of doctors borrowed a lot of money and bought property. And I'm finding that they are loaned almost like 90%, 95% loan to value. They are unable to sell the house. And, you know, I'm wondering what the strategies are when you've got not so great of a rate, 6-something percent, and it's variable. When you've got all this loan, you know, much high loan to value, what are some of the things, I mean, that you would feel safe doing in that situation?
Well, so these are, I gather, also expensive houses since you are in Miami.
These are $1 million.
Million to a million plus. That was my guess. It was a million to a million plus. So what we have to do here in thinking about what strategies might work for something like this is to begin with the end in mind. And the end is that Jonathan somehow makes a profit off of this. And because they are million-dollar-plus properties, a couple of things, and because the loan-to-value is 95%, a couple of things come off the table right away, a couple of strategies that most people would think of come off the table right away. You're not buying a property at 95 cents on the dollar, no matter how you buy it, and then turning around and flipping it and making money. That's just not going to happen. If you got it 90 cents on the dollar, put it on the market, sold it for 100 cents on the dollar, the commissions, the transfer taxes, all that stuff would eat your entire profit. So it has to be some kind of strategy where you can hold on to the property for a while. And that begs the question, is there any rental market for a million-dollar house? And if so, what do the monthly rents look like?
They don't. They look like they're lower than the payment would be, even with principal-only payments.
Okay. So how much lower? Like, let's say that the payment on the loan with taxes and insurance, because, you know, there's another thing, taxes and insurance in Florida. I'm understanding that insurance is problematic in Florida right now.
Out of control.
So let's say that the payment is $15,000 a month. What roughly do you think you could put a tenant in that property for? And I know we're talking about a theoretical property, but could you get $8,000 a month in rent for a house like that? Could you get $5,000 a month for a house like that? What's the number?
Yeah, I think we're talking about, you know, I think we're talking about payments around $88,000 and rental around $8,000 to $10,000. It's cutting it very slim, including taxes and insurance. It's cutting it slim.
Okay. So that tells me then what the structure needs to be, and it's going to require finding a cooperative seller, like one who's really motivated, right? You're not going to do this with some doctors like, yeah, I could sell or not. I found another house I like, but I don't like it that much. And that is, you're going to have to negotiate a fixed rate payment that is lower than the doctor's payment.
Right, I'll help you lose less.
Yes, exactly. If you got a doctor who, like, they've already moved out of town and their house isn't selling, and even if it did sell, they would have to pay, you know, $25,000 to sell it because of commissions and whatnot. And you were to say, well, what I would like to do is I would like to rent this property from you for $7,000 a month for 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, either I will buy the property at what you owe right now, or, which means you'll actually make a little money maybe because your loan balance will be lower, or I will say, yeah, it's not working out, and you'll get the property back, and hopefully it will be worth 15% more than it is right now, and you'll be able to safely sell it. So, yes, the position you're putting this person in, and you can explain it, but they'll figure it out right away, is I'm going to give you $7,000 to make an $8,000 payment. And so you're going to lose $1,000 a month. Is that better for you than losing $8,000 a month, which is what you're doing right now?
Right. And you're, by the way, your story was right on. They moved out. They're in another city. And they are beside themselves. So it may be possible to help them lose less.
Okay, yeah. So that structure is, of course, a lease with option to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll learn at the end of the month all the papers you need to put into place to make sure that that's still an agreement that you can enforce in 3 years. But, you know, if they're I have had people that have accepted a monthly payment of lower than what their payment was because they literally were just at their wit's end and they were like, well, better to get seven and pay eight than to get zero and pay eight. And if, you know, if they've lived there two of the last 5 years and you buy it in, you buy it before that time runs out, you buy it before the time that they haven't lived there two of the last 5 years anymore, then if they do make any money, they won't pay taxes on it, or they can make the decision to, treat it like a rental for tax purposes. Well, they're going to do that anyway. And then they can depreciate it, which is going to save them a lot more on their taxes than you and I would save on our taxes with the same depreciation because they have a higher tax bracket.
Yeah, I can see where you're going. And, you know, the people, the variable levels of sophistication, desperation kind of consumes the situation. I was hoping that there was a way to really lock in something, and I guess you do with the lease option, you lock it in and you see what happens. So basically I'll have to be a landlord for 3 years to see what happens, and well, I could always farm that out to somebody else.
Well, and what you'll do is you will you'll sandwich lease option it.
Mm-hmm.
Your goal is at the end of, you'd actually, if you had 3 years to pay off the property, you'd actually do a 2-year lease option with the next doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And the value of the property will go up over 2 years, right? So you're setting a higher price. You're not, you're saying you can buy a $1 million house for $950,000. Well, that's not going to be the sale price. The sale price is going to be $1.2 million or something, right? So then you have that back end money if the next guy buys it. And if not, you got another year to figure out what to do with it. Because I don't see any scenario under which you go, oh, I like this house so much that I'm going to go get a loan on it. It's not, unless interest rates drop to 2.5% again, it's just not going to work as a long-term rental.
I never use a bank.
Well, and then there's that. Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Great answer. Thank you.
All right.
See you in a couple weeks.
Yes, I will see you then, Jonathan. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tony in Columbus and also take your calls at 877-772-9658. Or if you need to send an email, send it to vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Before we go to Tony, who's called in at 877-772-9658 because it's question and answer day, just want to let you know that if you are listening to me on the radio, like you have a device in front of you with an on-off button and I'm coming out of speakers in your car or something like that, and you're in the real estate investing world, tomorrow night you need to be in Westchester at the Holiday Inn on Mulhauser Road because it is the annual Cincinnati RIA Real Estate Investing Expo. There are over 50 investor-friendly vendors who are going to be there, everybody from money people to insurance agents to CPAs and attorneys to contractors, you know, people who can fix your house, all of that sort of thing. And they will all come bearing not just good deals, but also door prizes. I just checked the registration. There will also be 259 local like-minded investors to come and network with. And I don't know how it could be any better than that, except to say it's also free. The only thing is we really need you to pre-register. Because we have to order food from the hotel. Yes, there will also be free food. And gosh, registration jumped up by almost 50 people today. And if it's going to jump up by 50 people again, we need to know so that we can modify the food order. So go to CincinnatiRIA.com. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. Just click the little Canva thing, pre-register, and be there tomorrow night. It starts at 5:30, ends at 8:30. You can come when you can and leave when you have to, but you should be there. It's a great event. Again, CincinnatiRIA.com. Let's talk to Tony on line 2 in Columbus. Tony, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thanks, Vina. And, you know, speaking of that expo, I want to first thank you for canceling the expo last night. right about 8 o'clock p.m., the pipe for my sump pump burst.
Oh, my.
And because we were home and not at the expo, we were able to nip it in the bud. And I got a few little wet spots in my basement, but that's it. We would have totally been there last night.
Well, I would like to say that I psychically knew that your sump pump was going to burst, but
yeah.
Of course, what really happened is,
right?
Yeah, for folks who are not in Ohio, it is tornado season in Ohio, and Columbus got bad torrential rains and a tornado watch on Monday, and then on Tuesday they were predicting the same thing, which I was headed up there. I was like, come on, tornadoes,
oh, yeah.
we're doing it. And then the hotel called and said, yeah, we got some roof damage last night, and those rooms that you're going to use, they're leaking. So
yeah.
we decided
that wasn't all that was leaking. So
yeah,
I'm glad we were able to stay home and catch it and nip it in the bud. So
that's right.
Thank you for looking out for us.
Yeah. Well, June 4th, we didn't cancel it. We just moved it June 4th.
That's right. Got it. So I have been deep digging into immersion and all things creative finance that you teach, getting ready for the event. I want to walk in there with my head, you know, not starting from ground zero, but, you know, just thinking it through and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've heard about, here's my question, is that I heard someone say that they did it was a subject to deal. The seller was a little nervous about giving up their deed. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they put their deed in escrow. And what they meant by that was that they had it sitting in escrow, and it was the way to give the seller confidence that they would honor the contract, if you will. Have you ever heard of such a thing, and what are your thoughts on that?
Okay. Big sigh. All right. So,
yes,
I've heard of it. I was taught that too when I was a baby real estate investor. And then as I got more and more interested in understanding technicalities and legalities and all those sorts of things, I discovered one legal problem and one practical problem with the idea of the deed in escrow.
Okay.
The practical problem is, so let's set up a fake scenario here. You want to buy my house subject to the existing loan. I'm all like, mm-hmm. But Tony, how do I know you're going to make my payments? You could ruin my credit. And I'd be right. You know, you could ruin my credit by not making my payments. And, you say to me, well, that's okay. At the closing, I will make a deed that goes back to you. So I'll make a deed that says, Tony's given it back to Vina, and we'll put it with a third party escrow agent, a title company, an attorney, somebody like that. And if I don't make my payments, there will be instructions that we put with this attorney now that say, you just got to prove I didn't make my payment, and he is to give you that deed, right? So then you'll own the mm-hmm. house again, quote unquote.
That's the scenario.
So the legal problem has to do with something that I'm about to give everybody who had to take the real estate agent test like a deja vu shudders. There's this idea called donative intent with deeds, and what that means is I'll just put it in like super super easy layman's terms. If I gave you a deed and there was a delay built into the deed, did I in fact mean to give you the deed by the time you actually take the deed? So the way that it most commonly comes up is what's called desk drawer deeds. Like mom will say to the kids, oh, I'm getting old and I don't want you to have to go through probate. So I put a deed in the dresser drawer. And if I die, you just run that right down to the courthouse and you record that. And then mom lives another 15 years, of course. And in the meantime, she gets married. She finds a new love of her life and she gets married. And she drops dead and the kids go try to record the deed. And the legal question becomes, given that there is now a spouse and we live in a dower state, was the intent now to give the entire property over to the kids when the husband would be generally entitled to half of it just for being married to her, right? Like, there's this whole question of what has happened subsequently.
Sure.
In the case of what you're talking about, what may have happened subsequently, so you bought the house from me, subject to the existing loan, and then you put $100,000 worth of work into it. And you also paid it down by $100,000. So now it's worth like nine times what the mortgage balance is. And you miss a payment. And it's, you know, it's 10 years later, and I go down to the courthouse and I say, yep, I'm recording this deed. And you go to court and you say, the house I deeded you is not the house that we currently are talking about.
Mm.
We're talking about a house that I have paid down, that I have put money into. You know, what I intended to give you back was the same house that I bought from you, and that's not what this is anymore. And we'd be in court for 6 months or a year, and you might win and I might win, but in the meantime my payments aren't getting made unless I'm making them, so it's all ugly.
Yeah. Okay,
so that's a maybe. What does the court say, and do you even object, right? Because if you dropped dead, probably you're not gonna object, although your heirs might, because all of a sudden they find out that they don't own a house that they thought they owned. So that's the kind of legal question mark. The practical problem is, go ahead and try to record a deed down at the courthouse that's got a signature and notary on it from 2 years ago. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that the courthouse has rejected those deeds because they said they're stale. It's a stale deed. And I think what they're trying to avoid is a donative intent argument.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So should they record it? I mean, really, I think they're supposed to record everything that's got a notary stamp on it. Does that mean they will record it? It does not. And then what? You know, then what do I do? You're not making my payments and I can't get the courthouse to record the deed and you're dead. Like, well, then what do I do? So here's the actual answer, Tony. Here's the actual solution. And it's going to be, I'm going to give you the high level overview, and then we'll talk. I mean, it really takes like an hour to explain this, and we can talk it at the Creative Finance Summit. Set up the ownership at the beginning to protect the seller in the case of your non-payment. And the way to do that is with a land trust.
Mm.
So you're thinking, oh, my LLC is going to own this property. No, your LLC can be the beneficiary of the land trust that owns the property. Mm-hmm. And the land trust can contain language in it that says, A, it's not revocable until you pay off that underlying loan. So you can't just take it out of the land trust to avoid this. B, the trustee is instructed that if you get behind in your payments by 30 days, that I, the seller, can come to the trustee and say, hey, he's 30 days behind. I've already gotten a ding on my credit report. And the trustee then comes to you and says, okay, you got 10 days to either prove that you did make the payment, because sometimes that's a mistake. Sometimes the bank just didn't, I don't know, put the money in the right account or something. And you can say, I got a canceled check here from Bank of America. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need to make it right, which at that point means making 2 months' payments, right? Because we're already 40 days in
right at
this point. So catching up would also solve it. And if you do neither thing, the trustee must create and sign a new deed back to me.
Interesting.
So it's a new deed, right? It's not a...
Mm-hmm.
And you're the one who set up the land trust and gave the trustee these instructions. So you can't do anything to him for following them. I can't do anything to him for following them. I mean, he's got a fiduciary duty to follow them. So that is what cleanly protects sellers from you not making the payments. And I have been using that seller protection land trust for 20 years.
Because I love that.
It dawned on me one day that, of course, I would always make the payment on a seller's loan. I would make the payment on a seller's loan before I'd make the payment on my own house. But
sure.
What if I'm in a coma?
Mm-hmm.
What if I died? You know, the seller can't wait 6 months for the probate to be settled so that the payments can start being made again or so that they can get their house back. It's got to be like right now. It's got to be before their credit starts to suffer.
That was an incredible answer. I've never heard it anywhere else. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you won't. Although I just said it on the radio, so probably every guru in the world's going to be teaching it from now on.
There it is.
All right. So
Thank you so much, Nina.
I appreciate you even thinking in that direction because not enough people think about how do I protect my sellers, my private lenders, my people who are depending on me for money if I'm in a position where I can no longer give them that money that they're depending on.
That's right. Well, yeah, I just want to help people with these skills that I'm learning from you and from Corey. And so, yes, I just want to help folks. And thank you for that. That's a great thing to put in my tools chest.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you calling and asking the question.
I appreciate your answer. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. It's question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll either take your phone call at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658, or just send an email to vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Mike, I'm going to need a way more specific weather report than that for Monday.
All right, well, I'll do it our best.
It's
things could change.
It's going to be cloudy. It's going to be rainy. It's going to be 40% cloudy. I got people flying in from Utah to come to Indiana to be in the path of totality. And they're like, should we cancel our plane tickets? And I'm like, I can't tell you this far out. So, yeah, welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. And got some questions that have come in via the email at vinoradio@gmail.com, although you can still call at 877-772-9658. The first question is from Darren, who says, glad to hear from you again. Did I disappear? I think I've been around. Maybe it was because I had the guest host last week. Yeah, that's going to happen, guys. It's either that or you get a show that was run before. We're going to do new shows with guest hosts. How about that? Found a potential maybe creative finance deal in Miami. Okay, that's interesting. That's where Jonathan was. I'm in Michigan. It's a 2-bedroom, 1-bath that can be turned into a 3-bedroom, 1-bath. 1,700 square feet, minor repairs. The Zillow estimate says a low of 900, but I think it might actually be worth 850. Seller prefers cash, but my cash offer is too low. She wants around 800 or 900. Boy, that's a huge swing. Did she really say I want 800 or 900? Because if she said that to me, I would only hear one of those two numbers, and that would be 800. That would be the number we would be working with from then on. If she fixes it and fixes the minor repairs and lists it, so she wants that if she fixes it and lists it. But if she sells to you, she doesn't have to fix it and she doesn't have to list it. I mentioned, would she consider terms? And she said, yes, if the terms are right. She's asking for the terms details. I need to know whether this is a deal or not. Is it a creative deal? Do I know any investors in Miami? Yes, I know Jonathan. I bet Jonathan's emailing me right now saying, hey, put Darren in touch with me, because if he's not, he's crazy. He should be emailing me right now and saying, put me and Darren in touch. So the question, because I just answered a really similar question to this for Jonathan, I'm going to say something a little more general, which is there's really only two great uses of creative finance. One is if you are trying to live in a house and creative finance is the only way you can do it, but you can afford the payments and whatnot. I bought my very first house on a land contract, the first one I lived in on a land contract. And the last one that I lived in, I bought it on a lease option because I wanted to live in more house than I could actually afford, given that I was going to need to make a $114,000 down payment. And I was, I don't know, $100,000 short of that at the moment, at the time that I found the house. So that's one good use, but that's not what you're thinking here. The other good use is in buy and hold strategies, because it being a creative deal generally means you can pay more for the property, but that only makes sense if you're going to hold the property for a long time. Okay. Like, again, I said this to Jonathan, buying an $800,000 house for $800,000 and getting great payments does not allow you to flip it. It allows you to do something like I talked about with Jonathan, which is maybe find somebody who wants to live there, buy it in a few years, pay rent in the meantime. A lot of people will come to me and say, oh, I found this house and I'm taking over a great 2.5% mortgage. And, $200,000 and, you know, it's worth $300,000 fixed up. And I say, wait, what does it need to fix it up? And they say, oh, it needs $60,000 in work. And I say, okay, so you're paying too much because you're planning on flipping it. You got excited about the 2.5% interest rate because the payments are super low, but you don't care that the payments are super low because you're not holding on to it. In 6 months, it's going to be gone. In 6 months, you're going to just sell it and you're not going to make very much money because you decided to overpay because you heard that you can pay more when there's a creative deal involved. That would be a great, you know, 2.5% loan. That would be a great loan to have if you were going to hold that thing as a rental for the rest of your life. But if you look at here, let's say it this way. The other option would have been to buy the property for $200,000, which would have been a mistake, put $60,000 in it and just get a hard money loan. Just get a 12% loan on it. And you're saying, but that's 10 points more than the one I took over. Yes, but over the course of 6 months, how much actual money is that? The answer is not all that much. So in order to answer your question, I, again, would need to know, what is the rent potential on this place? Most $800,000 properties don't have a bunch of rent potential. The path to profitability there is probably either an Airbnb, if the area allows it, and it's good for that particular market, or something like a lease option where you can allow it to be to grow up in value before you sell it, or if she would take terms that made it cash flow as a rental and then took it long term, took these terms long term. I kind of feel like maybe this house is paid off because you didn't say anything about a mortgage. If she would take $3,000 a month until paid, that you will be very happy you bought that property. Cause even with the taxes and insurance, which are likely to be $1,000 or more a month, I'm pretty sure you could make a cash flow as a rental and you would have a great house. And the only problem is you're in Michigan and it's in Miami. So maybe reach out to somebody from Miami to see if any of those numbers are real at all. But thank you for your question and good to hear from you again too, Darren. Let's go to line one and talk to Alan in Columbus. Alan, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Well, hello, Vina. How are you doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
All righty. Well, you've been doing a great job tonight. I've heard both of your previous callers, and I know them both personally, and you did a great job in responding to their questions. So
wow.
I've got another question for you.
You're super connected. you know everybody when you're like, oh, I know everybody who's calling your show.
Oh, yeah. I know Jonathan by the voice. Believe me. So I got a call today from somebody that has a duplex in Dayton, Ohio, that they can buy for $50,000, and they are currently a tenant in that building paying $650 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any money to buy it with. And the other unit is rented by somebody that's been there a long time for $500 a month. So there's $1,150 a month coming into this. Mm-hmm. What would you propose as a way to help this person buy the property?
Well, I don't need to tell you that step one is to make sure that the place is worth $50,000. I mean, those are low rents even for Dayton, and my thought was, well, it probably hasn't been updated in a really long time. There's probably some deferred maintenance and whatnot to be dealt with there, and you'd have to actually figure out was $50,000 a good asking price or wasn't it? And so this person has the opportunity to buy it mainly in the sense that they're probably the owner came to them and said, I'm going to sell it. Do you want to buy it? Right. So they just have a lead and a potentially good price on the property.
Yeah, we believe that's a good price based on so far the work we've done to look at it.
Okay. So effectively, she could own the house for about the same monthly payment she's making for rent if she could get financing, which I'm gathering she can't.
Yeah, it's probably not the case. It's actually a he, and he's a handyman, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do any repairs that it needs, but he is probably not bankable because he's self-employed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the problem is when you're paying rent, you don't always understand the actual expenses of owning that rental. And I get it. He's a handyman and he's thinking, well, I can just go get materials and I can fix whatever, but can't, you know, it's not realistic that he's going to put a roof on all by himself when the roof goes bad. It's not probably not realistic that he's going to put in a new furnace and central air when it needs it because he's a handyman. He probably doesn't have that level of expertise and whatnot. So two things have to happen here simultaneously. Number one is you need to qualify this person and see how much of the burden of ownership they can actually financially take on. Now, this dude could be making $8,000 a month, and it's all fine. He could hire anybody to do anything he wants to do. But if he's living in a $650 a month unit because he only makes $2,000 a month, he's going to have a real hard time fixing the gutters, you know, replacing the gutters when they need to be replaced and, you know, all the things. I mean, you know, it costs money to own rentals beyond just whatever the payment is. So that's piece one is I would kind of like, you know, you pre-qualify deals, but you also need to pre-qualify potential partners, borrowers, you know, all of that sort of thing. Beyond just do they want it? It's like, can they emotionally handle it? Can they physically handle it? Can they financially handle it? And that would be a question that I would be asking here. Also remember he's used to being a tenant, and if he buys this property, he becomes the landlord. Which means if the guy downstairs doesn't pay, he's got to deal with that legal situation. He's got to take somebody who has been his literally downstairs neighbor for many years and sue him and make him leave. And that might be beyond him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what we were thinking, that maybe he's not going to be a great landlord to somebody else. This person that's been there in the other path has been there for a long time. They're probably not going to get up and leave. But at some point they will, and then he's going to have to find a person to step in there, or he's going to have an extra debt to cover because nobody's in it. And
yeah.
That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, and it's almost certainly rented under market, and, you know, the idea that he's going to go to the guy downstairs and say, hey, I need you to start paying an extra $50 a month because, A, you're way under market, and, B, it turns out this thing is costing me a lot to own, and I didn't realize it. So I think the question is, how can he test drive home ownership?
Yes, that would be a great question.
And the answer would probably be something. And I should say this. I know you know this, but I should say this to other listeners. the idea of you lending him money to buy the property is kind of out of the question because he is living there. And even though it's a two-family, it is still his home. And you really can't make loans to homeowners without very specific types of licensing and certifications and whatnot that I'm sure you don't want to go out and get for this $150,000 deal. So
that is true.
How do we let somebody test drive homeownership to see if they like it? Well, you could buy the property and you could lease it to him with an option to buy it at a slightly higher price than what you would need to pay for it. And he would then pay you higher than $650 a month rent, but he would be able to collect the $500 a month rent. So he would net, he would probably be at a lower rent than he is right now. And part of the terms of the option would be, okay, you said you could fix it. You're going to fix it. Like, you're going to do the work. And if you don't, that's fine. Like, you're a renter. If you need me to come in and replace the roof, I will come and replace the roof. However, if I have to do that, you no longer have the option to buy the house because you sort of just proved that whole thing about can you do that is not, the answer is no.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way.
I've done this before with people, and I do not hear me say you still need to pre-qualify him to make sure he can make whatever payment is going to happen here. But what I have done with some people that I was kind of they were very excited about owning a rental, but I wasn't sure they really understood what all of that meant. Is I have done a lease with option to buy, but the option was if you do what you say you're going to do for 2 years, then I will let you buy it on a contract for deed. You don't have to go get a loan from a bank because if he's a self-employed handyman, he might be unbankable for the rest of his life. And it would be a real shame if that kept him from being a homeowner for the rest of his life. Now, in 2 years, he might be able to, like, actually start filing full returns and claiming all of his income and all that. And he might be able to get an FHA loan, and that would be great. But if not, you could continue to carry with him via something like a contract for deed. And then he would actually be paying off the property at that point. And I have even told people, look, you're gonna need to buy it from me at 55 because I'm putting 50 into it, and then there's gonna be costs and all that kind of stuff, and I do need to make some money, and then you're gonna pay me $750 a month, whatever the number is, and if in 2 years you have done every single solitary thing you said you wanted to do, and also you really like it, you really like being the landlord, quote unquote. Then we will switch that over to a land contract, and I will credit your first 2 years worth of payments as if they had been principal and interest and taxes and insurance payments instead of rent payments. So it's not going to lower his balance a whole bunch because you got to back out. Okay. What would the taxes have been? What would the insurance have been? What would the interest have been? All that sort of stuff. But I like to give people like every chance to reach their real estate dreams, but at the same time, I like to test them out to make sure they truly understand what it is they're getting into.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. We thought about the lease option and also maybe a master lease sort of, where he is managing it to try out being the landlord.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying he rents the whole house and he collects rent from downstairs.
Yeah.
Or not. Yep. If he discovers that he can't, or if he decides to do what a lot of people are very excited about being rental owners because they're like, this is great. When this guy moves out, my brother can move in.
Yeah.
And we all know how that story usually ends.
All right. Okay.
All right.
That helps a lot. So we're going to dig into the details and then we'll let you know.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Alan.
All right. Thanks, Vina.
All right. I have a question in the inbox from Valerie who says, I have a seller who said he and his wife are selling to avoid foreclosure. He says there's no auction or foreclosure date. They want to save their credit. They bought the house in 21 during COVID. He lost his job and they're both handicapped. He applied for a home equity line of credit but got denied. The house still has a mortgage balance of about 59. They bought it for 64. The house is in a flood zone and did flood in 2015. The seller said the water apparently rose to the first floor. He said they are told, despite the whole street being in a flood zone, floods only seem to happen every 100 years, and as a result, they get some leaking in the basement when it rains. The basement needs to be resealed, the walls and floors redone in the basement. The house has 14 broken windows, which sounds like vandalism. Okay, did he really mean broken windows, or did he mean like they don't go up and down? Is he living in this house? He's not living in a house with 14 broken windows, is he? Those will need fixing or replacing. They're $2,100 behind on their FHA loan, which I would need to bring current. They need upfront money to move and money for their next place rent and security deposit. I offered $2,000 and buy subject to, and they said that would be too low because since they're handicapped, they'll need movers to do most of the work. He is living there. Goodness gracious. They won't have money again until May. They need 45 days to move, so I would wait to close when they're out. The upstairs is very nice. I see no work to be done upstairs. It's a nice two-story, 2-1 brick in Toledo. I believe I could cash flow this property. The limit is they need likely around $5,000 in order to move forward getting their next home and hire a mover. How would you recommend structuring this? Well, Valerie, very first thing you should do with this guy is call him back and say, I understand that you were turned down for a HELOC. That's because you don't have a job. Have you applied for a loan modification? Because there is no way that he is finding a place to live where the payments are cheaper than on a $64,000 mortgage at 2021 interest rates. He may not realize it, but unless he's moving in with family or something, he is trapped in that house. He is not going to find a place. He can't afford the payments on this place, and he's not going to find a cheaper place. So you need to call him and ask him if he has tried for a loan modification, because he may get one that allows him to somehow pay less given his whatever his disability situation is. The second thing is, so you've got this issue here that he needs $5,000 now to catch up the loan and to get moved, but you don't want to close until after he moves. So that's a catch-22, and you're not going to be able to fix it. If you're going to buy the house, you need to like buy it now before the payments get even further behind and there's even more penalties, and they actually, you know, send legal notice and add another $5,000. Like, it's going to be cheaper for you to buy it now than it is for you to buy it in 45 days. So, yeah, you know, go ahead and buy it and give him the $3,000 and give him 45 days to move and put a thing in the contract that says after 45 days, you are on a lease and here is how much your lease payment is. And if you don't pay that lease payment, then I'm going to have to evict you. Because he's not going to find a cheaper place than where he's already living. Why don't you bring this to the Friday morning haves and wants meeting at Cincinnati RIA on Friday. And I know you're way far away, so you can't come to the big expo tomorrow. But everybody else should come to that. CincinnatiRIA.com for tickets. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.